At any rate, I'm very happy now to welcome to our program Jake Johnston. He's a research associate at the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C., and we've invited Jake here to talk about his very important August 29th article published in The Intercept, which is titled How Pentagon Officials May Have Encouraged a 2009 Coup in Honduras. Jake, thanks so much for making time to join us on the program tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So before we get into a lot of the detailed investigations that you covered in this important article, maybe you could tell us a bit about what inspired you to undertake the investigation in the first place. And maybe a way into this topic is to talk a little bit about what happened in 2009, as certainly this hemisphere and much of the world's attention was focused on Honduras, which was undergoing a military coup for the first time in many years in that part of the world.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, in many ways, it was sort of a throwback to this Cold War era, right? I think it took a lot of people by surprise, and it certainly was a focus not just of people in the U.S., but really across the region. And this was really a formative event for U.S. relations with the hemisphere, remembering that this was just a few months into Obama's presidency.
So this was something that got your attention, and it held on for a long time. And so your what was your goal in trying to uncover the United States' role here in this coup?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, over the last 8 years, there's been a lot of information that's come out, you know, whether it be through WikiLeaks, release of the diplomatic cables and Clinton emails and, you know, efforts like that. And there's, you know, has been sort of this growing consensus around the U.S. role and the fact that the U.S. did play a role in this coup. And yet, you know, there really hasn't been much that sort of delved into the details of really how that played out. And I think, you know, this really is a story that's about more than just Honduras, right? It's about, you know, these personal relationships that are often built over decades and the influence they can have over U.S. foreign policy, right? How a comment from a friend can matter a whole lot more than, you know, some official policy briefing in Washington.
Matt, I think one important thing we should start with is to acquaint our listeners with the Honduran president at the time of this coup, Manuel Zelaya, who I think was considered by many to be a moderate when he won the presidency in Honduras, but later on was considered an acolyte of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. But talk a bit about Manuel Zelaya and the circumstances that, you know, we understand triggered the coup by the Honduran military.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's exactly right, is when Zelaya was first elected, he certainly wasn't thought of as some sort of a radical or even a leftist at all, but came from one of the traditional political parties that has ruled Honduras for decades. And over his time in office, he did, you know, make some diplomatic overtures to Venezuela. But I think probably more importantly, at least in terms of the domestic politics, was his efforts to sort of really address some root causes of inequality and poverty in Honduras that had been left sort of unaddressed for a very long time. And took many steps such as, you know, trying to address reform and issues around that, raising the minimum wage, and really sort of put him on a collision course with the country's elite, which had and continues to rule the country. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of, in terms of sort of the U.S. role, the relations with Venezuela certainly played a key role in determining U.S. policy, but that doesn't necessarily mean that actor on the ground, right?
I think we got cut off there in the last sentence or so. Could you repeat that?
Yeah, just that the, you know, the relationships with Venezuela, you know, which at the time and in many ways continues to be sort of public enemy number one of the U.S. in the hemisphere, you know, certainly was a motivating factor in terms of U.S. policy after the coup, and was used by the coup supporters to sort of get the U.S. more onto their side. But this was really sort of more justification after the fact. And so the real conflict that precipitated this coup was a question over consulting the population on reforming the Constitution. Zelaya had proposed a referendum that would gauge the public's interest in reforming the Constitution. And this was meant to be a non-binding referendum. And it was sort of turned into Zelaya's efforts to stay in office. And that was sort of the rhetoric and the justification that was used to support and then garner support for their actions after the fact.
Thanks for that, Jake. I'd like you to maybe talk a bit more about how the Honduran military is intertwined with the United States. And you specifically talk about the Center for Hemispheric Defense Studies, which, according to your research, played a critical role in offering support to individual military officers in Honduras who were part of this coup plot. And in some cases, we're working in the direct opposite direction, in the opposite direction of those in the State Department and in the White House.
Yeah, and so when you look at the relationship between the Honduran and U.S. military, like so much of the hemisphere, you're talking about a relationship that was really forged during the Cold War. You know, and in the 1980s, the U.S. negotiated access to a Honduran military base, Soto Cano, and ensured U.S. access. And this was really what turned Honduras into what it became known as the USS Honduras, a sort of staging ground for U.S. intervention and support for right-wing militaries and insurgencies throughout the hemisphere during the Cold War. And really what we're seeing both in 2009 and even today is sort of this continuation of those relationships and those interests that really date back to that era. When we look at the Center for Hemispheric Defense Studies, this is, you know, just one of many U.S. institutions that focuses on bringing up foreign military officers, and in the case of the Center for Hemispheric Defense Studies, also civilians, to sort of train them, take classes, and also I think what's a key part of this are developing these relationships, and you sort of see these relationships build and impact policy over a period of many years. The Center for Hemispheric Defense Studies is sort of the university wing, I guess you could say, of the Pentagon's Latin American subsidiary, which is the U.S. Southern Command, better known as SOUTHCOM.
And is that tied in with the School of the Americas at Fort Benning, which later took on WINSEC, I believe, was the acronym for what the School of the Americas later became?
Yeah, and so, I mean, you know, the School of the Americas is sort of the most well-known institution that functioned as this, and that was more combat training. And certainly, you know, countless members of security forces took courses there over the years who were later implicated in human rights abuses, coup d'etats, et cetera. An interesting connection is actually that at the time of the coup, the director of the center, as well as his deputy, had actually just come from WINSEC, which was formerly School of the Americas, where they had been the leadership there as well. So there is actually a direct connection between the two.
So, Jake, what is the essential information that you garnered in your investigation here about the Pentagon working at cross purposes with some in the State Department about U.S. policy, both before the coup, when there were signs the coup was coming, and then after the coup, when there was an effort by some in the Obama administration to repatriate Zelaya back into office after he was flown out of the country by the Honduran military?
Yeah, and so you had, after the ouster of Zelaya and the coup d'etat, you had not just the U.S., but the entire international community really condemn this action as sort of a throwback to the Cold War, and did not recognize the coup regime and called for Zelaya's restoration. What, you know, we realized after the fact, and I think, you know, those who are watching this a little more closely certainly could see that this crisis was building and that it was reaching this precipice. And after the fact, the U.S., you know, said that they had been constantly engaged, sort of working to find a constitutional solution to the crisis in Honduras, and had been working sort of round the clock to try and prevent this from happening. You know, what I uncovered in this investigation was that, you know, and this sort of speaks to the closeness of the two militaries, was that on the eve of the coup, as towards chaos, the U.S. defense attaché actually threw a party for U.S. diplomats, military officers, as well as their Honduran counterparts. So it creates this image of, you know, while this, all of this political machinations are happening behind the scenes, these guys are friends, right? They're all sort of part of the same circle.
And so what actually was uncovered here in terms of the actions of people in the Pentagon, or specifically within the Center for Hemispheric Defense Studies, that led you to believe these folks were actually backing the coup and working across purposes with the State Department?
Yeah, so I think, you know, one point to sort of make up front, and I think, you know, many people often think of the U.S. government sort of as this cohesive entity with one singular policy, right? And I think, you know, one of the key findings is sort of trying to explain how this is really sort of this den of bloated bureaucracies, right? Each acting on these competing interests, right? And so you had all of these different players and all of these different U.S. entities trying to protect these various interests. And when you talk about the Pentagon in Honduras, there's a tremendous amount of sort of equity and assets that they have there, starting primarily with the military base that I mentioned. You know, after the Cold War, as U.S. bases sort of closed down throughout the region, the base of Soto Cano really became, as one diplomat told me, the only game in town. And it remains today sort of a center of U.S. drug interdiction and other efforts throughout the hemisphere. And what I kept sort of hearing as I talked to various former military officers, diplomats, et cetera, was just the importance of these assets and protecting these assets after the coup. And so you had this condemnation and you had a lot of pressure on the U.S. to take a harder line, to restrict assistance, to determine that it was a military coup, which legally would have required aid cutoffs, et cetera. And in the end, the U.S. did not call it a military coup and did not go as far as many people expected or encouraged the government to do so. And one of the key findings was the sort of interests of the Pentagon in maintaining a relationship sort of regardless of the situation on the ground. And the situation on the ground was quite dire, right? I mean, you had this coup regime that was repressing a growing anti-coup resistance movement that was arbitrarily detaining, that was breaking up protests, and that certainly has been implicated in multiple extrajudicial killings during the time. And yet those weren't the primary concerns of the U.S. and certainly of the Pentagon, but rather protecting this relationship that, again, dates back to the Cold War.
We're speaking with Jake Johnston, a research associate at the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, and we're talking about his investigative article titled How Pentagon Officials May Have Encouraged a 2009 Coup in Honduras, and this was published in the Intercept investigative news site. Jake, one of the interesting things that happened after the coup was that somehow the deposed president, Manuel Zelaya, snuck back into the country and actually was holed up, I think, was it the Ecuadorian embassy? I'm not certain of which embassy, but
Brazilian embassy.
Brazilian. So he snuck back into the country and got into the Brazilian embassy, and there was a months-long standoff there. Fill us in a little bit about the dynamics there, because here you had the former deposed president of the country in the capital in Tegucigalpa, unable to take his rightful place as president, and the United States is standing there, making these pronouncements about how he should be restored, and the military, which is supported by the United States, is not hearing anything, is certainly standing in the way of that kind of restoration.
Yeah, well, I think one of the most interesting aspects of that in Zelaya's sort of, the standoff that happened at the Brazilian embassy, and this is something that's sort of often lost in sort of the interpretations of the events, right, is it was sort of seen by many as this battle between Venezuela and this Chavez acolyte Zelaya, versus the sort of United States and these other forces. But, you know, in reality, the sort of opposition to the coup within the hemisphere was in many ways actually led by Brazil, and certainly the presence of Zelaya at the embassy and Brazil's really leading role in trying to overturn the coup was really the primary motivating factor cohesive factor within the region. And, you know, I wanted to touch on one thing that we had mentioned earlier, and this is sort of some of the more specifics that came out of this investigation and sort of speaks to the relationship between the two militaries. And this was after the coup, and this was, the U.S. had condemned it. There was increasing pressure on the Honduran military, sort of had been portrayed as as the sole forces behind this. And the Honduran military, recognizing that this was jeopardizing a relationship with their largest benefactor, sought to lobby sort of in their defense up in Washington. And two Honduran colonels were sent to D.C. to do just that. And this is where the center comes into play, that in the article I have multiple sources alleging that the colonels actually met with a retired U.S. general who was a dean at the center at the time, who had voiced his support and allegedly helped facilitate meetings in Congress for the Honduran colonels, right? And I think when you look at sort of why this pressure, and not only from the world but from the United States, didn't actually have much impact on the ground or impact the Honduran security forces to allow Zelaya back, it's these messages of support that they were also receiving, not just from staff at the center, but from members of Congress. The number of conservative Republicans went down to Honduras and sort of stated their support for the coup, and all these sort of actors that really emboldened the Honduran military and the other interests, economic and political elite who had backed the coup, not to give way. And, I think it's important to note, right, this wasn't just a coup that happened over, an hour, 24 hours. This was a coup that really took place over a period of months. You had the coup regime exile Zelaya and then engage in, really a many month long sort of battle to hold on to power and to consolidate this coup. And it wasn't until elections in that November, conducted under the coup regime and without Zelaya's restoration to office, that the coup, truly succeeded.
One other thing that you wrote about in the article that I think was telling was that very important air base in Honduras, Soto Cano, was used to support the Contras in Nicaragua and other wars in Central America in previous years, and was at that time in 2009 being used to support the U.S. drug war throughout the hemisphere. But the United States and the Honduran military basically controlled that air base together. I think you described it as joint control of the air tower and such. But the evening of the coup, when that took place, and Zelaya was in his pajamas being transported on a Honduran plane to Costa Rica to put him in exile, was that there was some suspicion, I think, of people you talked to, that the United States must have or should have been aware of what was going on and allowing this plane to leave Honduran airspace with the deposed president maybe spoke to a connivance there between the Honduran military coup plotters and the Pentagon.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And a lot of people have pointed to the fact that the Honduran military brought Zelaya to Soto Cano before departing the country as evidence in and of itself of U.S. support for the coup. And, it is certainly something that bears more investigation. I think one of the things that researchers have run up against, there's a great independent researcher, Jeremy Bigwood, who's done a tremendous amount of work uncovering documents through the Freedom of Information Act. And he tried to seek these control tower records from the day of the coup. And the response from the government was that they had been sort of routinely destroyed after a number of years. But what actually happened was when Zelaya was kidnapped from his residence, the military brought him to Soto Cano and then put him on the presidential plane on the tarmac there before leaving. Now, this was already some time after the coup had, after his actual kidnapping had taken place. Certainly the word of that, people would have been aware of what was happening. Seeing the presidential plane loading up, fueling and taking off, you would think would be raising a few red flags, and yet it doesn't appear to have done that.
Jake, how much support was there for this coup d'etat in Honduras among conservative and Republican Congress people and senators? What was going on? You mentioned it a moment ago, but what was the depth of support for the coup?
Yeah, well, I think, this really speaks to sort of the environment at the time, right, which you was seen sort of as this peak moment of Venezuelan influence. And then through these various regional collaborations that had sought to sort of exclude the United States and have a more, regional focus on things. And there was certainly a segment of the U.S. government, and this, was quite evident under the Bush administration and during the time 2002 when the U.S. openly backed a coup d'etat against Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. But really, you know, when Obama came in, much of that apparatus still existed within the government. And outside of the sort of, you know, federal government, you had these members of Congress, conservatives, who saw this fight in Honduras as sort of a proxy war over influence in the region, the U.S. versus Venezuela. And they certainly sort of clumped on to this fight over, you know, something that was much broader about Honduras and really had nothing to do with Honduras. And you saw, again, as I mentioned earlier, a number of Republicans actually went to Honduras, appeared with the coup regime, voiced their support for these actions, condemning Zelaya. And as I mentioned earlier, I mean, this does have sort of a corrosive impact on what this official word is from Washington. Now, I think one of the interesting dynamics that occurred over the months after the coup, you know, this is sort of seen by many at the time as the State Department sort of saying the right things, and only sort of due to, you know, unforeseen circumstances, eventually sort of coming around to supporting this coup or allowing the coup to succeed. And I think, you know, the evidence that's come out over the last 8 years shows that this was really a strategy from the beginning. And all of the bluster from conservatives in Congress, from these actors such as those at the center or military officers on the ground, really sort of provided cover for the Democrats in office and those in the State Department to sort of silently support the coup. And this was most clearly evidenced in November, late October and November, around a debate around the elections. The rest of the hemisphere had made clear that without Zelaya's restoration to office, they would not recognize the results of the election. This was a key pressure point to try and encourage the restoration of Zelaya to office. And the U.S. equivocated on that and said, so long as a deal gets reached, you know, we're gonna move forward. And a deal was indeed reached, but it contained this big loophole that the Honduran Congress would vote on whether or not Zelaya was restored. And there was no timetable for that. And the day after that agreement was reached, the State Department's top official for the Western Hemisphere, Tom Shannon, went on live television and said that the U.S. would recognize the elections regardless of Zelaya's restoration. You know, with that comment, the deal that so many people had worked so long to try and cobble together to try and overturn this coup really fell apart. And the elections did end up going ahead. It was boycotted not just by many in Honduras, but also by international observers. And really the only government that was supportive from the beginning was the United States, which did send observers from both the National Democratic Institute and the International Republican Institute. So this speaks to the sort of more institutional support that, you know, many people weren't necessarily looking at the time, but certainly it's clear with hindsight.
Jake, through your research, have you gotten any insight into President Obama's position, his actual genuine position on the coup in Honduras, as well as former Secretary of State and presidential candidate Hillary Clinton? What do we know specifically about Obama and Clinton and their actions on the Honduran coup?
Yeah, well, certainly Obama made a very strong statement against the coup a few days after it. And it was sort of the first time where he clearly said this is not legal. You know, this is a throwback to the days where militaries overthrew presidents. But I think, you know, again, this speaks to sort of the diffuse interest in how the U.S. foreign policy apparatus really works. A question like Honduras or an issue like Honduras, while it might be extremely important to certain pockets of the U.S. government, doesn't always rise to the sort of level of the president, right? And so you have a lot of sort of the institutions and the bureaucracy, both on the ground and sort of behind the scenes, that is really able to drive this policy. And it's really a similar situation in the State Department, where while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, and certainly, you know, as Secretary of State bears responsibility for U.S. policy at the time, you know, the evidence really indicates that it was largely left to, again, this top official for the Western Hemisphere, Tom Shannon, who, in fact, was really rose to prominence within the State Department under the Bush administration and, you know, is a sort of, you know, out in the open Republican and actually remains in the State Department today as one of the top officials under the Trump administration.
Well, Jake, thank you. We're almost out of time. I would just ask you to conclude here by relating to our listeners a bit about the conditions in Honduras today after this 2009 coup. the military still holds sway. There is an elected president, but there has been evidence of enormous repression of those who are resisting the policies of the military. I know there has been murders of prominent environmental activists like Berta Cáceres in 2016, and others who oppose some of the development plans of the military, building dams and such in some of the jungle areas of Honduras. Tell us a bit about what the conditions are there for civil society at this moment.
Yeah, and it's an excellent question. I mean, I think, you know, the importance of this investigation is not just looking back at a historical event, but trying to understand, you know, the actors and interests that continue to shape U.S. policy in Honduras today and ensure this continuation of the status quo, which, as you know, rightly point out, is extremely dire on the ground. Honduras has become one of the world's most dangerous places to report the news, defend human environmental rights. You mentioned Berta Cáceres' assassination in 2016. And what many people don't realize about Berta was that while she was best known for her environmental activism, she was also a leading force in the anti-coup resistance and was actually a vice presidential candidate in that 2000 election before boycotting it after the U.S. decision to recognize the election. And so, again, I mean, as you do see today, continuing human rights abuses and other, you know, actions by the Honduran security forces that are occurring, you know, with virtual impunity. And again, you sort of look at these historical connections and these interests of the U.S. that ensures this continuation of support for the security forces and this continuation of the status quo on the ground. And we're seeing this ever shrinking space for human rights defenders in Honduras. And there's an election coming up in November, you know, sort of an ironic twist. Juan Orlando Hernandez from the National Party. This is the party that really consolidated control over Honduras politically after the coup, has actually stacked the courts and paved his way for his own reelection, precisely the justification for Zelaya's ouster 8 years ago. And I think there are many concerns in Honduras that this is sort of just another step on a slippery slope towards you know, a further step back into the past.
Jake, thanks so much for joining us, and leave our listeners with an easy way they can get a hold of this article, either at the Intercept website where it's been published, or maybe you have your own website or that of the group you work with, the Center for Economic and Policy Research, or give all the websites if you'd like.
Exactly. Theintercept.com, it's definitely up there and should be relatively easy to find. It's also on our website, cepr.net. And there's not just the article, but a whole range of information about events that have been taking place in Honduras, not just related to the coup, but more speaking to some of the events that are happening currently on the ground.
All right, Jake, thanks so much for spending time with us and for conducting this important investigation into U.S. foreign policy in Honduras and the reality there today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Take care, Jake. Thank you. Good night. That's Jake Johnston, research associate at the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. Again, his article, his investigation titled How Pentagon Officials May Have Encouraged a 2009 Coup in Honduras can be found on the Intercept.com website. And there are other places you can find information on WikiLeaks cables implicating the State Department and Pentagon in that 2009 coup.